Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. So today, I actually have two great guests with me. They were here for my 40-year-old version review. I have Rose and Courtney from the Fiction Fixation podcast, and we're here to review one of my favorite movies, Practical Magic, and we're going to see how this thing holds up nostalgically, and then we're going to race the nostalgia afterwards. So let's go on ahead. Let's do this.
Hey, awesome. Yeah, thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. And I just want to say this. It was a pleasure to be able to review the 40-year-old version with me the couple of months back. I do appreciate that. We had a great time doing that. So I'm like, when I was picking up this movie, I'm like, well, what would be good for Rose and Courtney to review? So I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to go Practical Magic.
It was the perfect choice.
We'll never say no. We'll review it again in a week.
Yeah. Let's do it every week.
I don't know. I think people got tired of the Christmas story for that. I don't think that they can handle a review of us doing this 24 hours.
This isn't about them.
That's true. It's about us, John. It's not about them. But first of all, I want to actually mention this to everyone that's watching. We are actually sponsored by Fanatics. Fanatics is a sports store. Go ahead, get some stuff from Fanatics. Make yourself comfortable and get yourself something warm for the winter. And you guys can actually get that at the description below to actually support us. And now we're going to get started with our review for Practical Magic. So what would you say that you would rank this for nostalgia? What was like the very first time that you've actually seen Practical Magic?
It's a 10 for nostalgia. It is a 10. And I think I saw it the first time. I think I might have been 9, 10.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember how old I was, but it was around the time of release, probably like 1998. It came out in 97, right?
98.
Okay, so it probably was like 98, 99. Yeah, I would rate it a 10 as well. I gained a new appreciation on this most recent watch, and I'll go into that later.
I'm going to have to go like a 7.5 out of 10 for me, just for the fact that for nostalgia, I didn't see this at the theaters or anything like that growing up or anything like that. I was in junior high or high school whenever this came out. Matter of fact, I remember my nephew's mom. She's like, hey, look, I rented this movie from the video store called Practical Magic. Do you want to check it out? I'm like, yeah, well, I'll be glad to. So she let me borrow her rented copy from the VHS store. All I had to do was return it back to her, and she returned it back to the store. But I wound up loving it. I loved Nicole Kidman. I thought that the chemistry between Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock was really good, very spot on with that. The casting choices with this was good from what I remember when I was in junior high. The music choice is very 90s, which is something. You have Faith Hill on this. You have Marvin Gaye on it. I remember even owning the soundtrack to this. So
yeah, the soundtrack is pretty good. I love it. As soon as that, this kiss kicks mm-hmm. on, I'm like, yes, that's the one.
The placement of this kiss, in this movie is just impeccable.
It's perfect placement. Every single thing fit the tone for the movie. It wasn't for the sake of it just being there. Mm-hmm. It actually had a reason, and it actually described the characters, because you get some soundtracks that are like, this does not match what the theme of this movie is. Mm-hmm. This one, it feels like Practical Magic, and even the magic between the first love interest, between Sandra Bullock's character and the man she falls in love with, feels very magical within the soundtrack mm-hmm. itself.
I noticed also that they have, just at random times, in the background, you can faintly hear birds and crickets. I at one point had to pause it because I'm like, is there a cricket in this bedroom? And it's not. It was on. I'd never noticed it before, but it's in the movie. There's just like crickets and birds just kind of throughout the mm-hmm. whole movie, just kind of faintly in the background.
It's That's like a little relaxation type of thing, right? Yeah. Where you can just basically just meditate a little bit while watching this movie, you know? You can smoke something, maybe relax and calm your nerves, right?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. I didn't catch that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was everywhere. Cause at first I was just like, why are there birds still outside? Like something's wrong. There's birds still outside. It's dark and it's snowing. Then I'm like, wait a minute. No. And then I'm like, oh, the crickets are here. Cause I'm like, where's the cricket in the bedroom? We had to once stop recording for the night because there was a cricket and it was so loud in my office and I couldn't find it. That was the worst. Yeah.
Well, guess what? So now that we stripped away the nostalgia, the nostalgia of it, we're going to go on ahead and talk about this scene by scene through a modern day eye. So let's go on ahead. Let's start doing that now. So we're here to celebrate the Owens woman, Sandra Bullock, Nicole Kidman, in the movie that made us believe in love potions and the power of sisterhood. So light your candles, circle your salt, and remember, there's a little witch in all of us. Welcome to Practical Magic, where every episode is a little spellbinding. So it opens up to a young witch named Maria Owens is exiled to Maria's Island in Massachusetts with her unborn child for escaping her execution. When her lover does not come to rescue her, she desperately casts a spell upon herself to stop falling in love due to heartbreak and only to die soon after. So you actually have a little bit of the backstory of, it kind of reminds me of the Sanderson sisters, right? From Hocus Pocus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other people wanting to hang someone for being a witch. And I like the fact that we're actually in that time first and then we go into modern day time in 98.
Yeah.
Of seeing, these two little girls growing up. But I like how they said, well, even the magic that this woman has, she doesn't even know how to describe it herself. She doesn't realize how she does it. She just does it because mm-hmm. it's within her bloodline. And I like how she gets herself off the rope and she starts running away from the crowd. So that was, I really like the opening, scene. What about for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, so that was actually one of the things that I really gained a new appreciation for rewatching it. I realized on this rewatch how great the script is, the screenwriting on this movie, because that first initial scene, they have so much to set up. And I think any other movie would have just given us a cut scene of the great, great ancestor Maria escaping, you know, through magic, escaping her execution. But that's not the character we need to get to know. We need to get to know the aunts. We need to get to know the little girls. And so they told us that story through the voices of the aunts and the little girls. And they put it in the context of why the little girls are coming to live with the aunts. So I just, I really was like, whoa, this is really great storytelling right here. Cause in 5 minutes, they set everything up and they did it in a really great way.
I definitely agree with you on that, Rose, because here's the thing. We have to be solely invested into these characters. In order for us to be invested in them, we have to care about them. And the way they do it is we don't get to see their faces, but we get to hear their voices and explain the lineage of their background and why they are the way they are. So without that context, without that, you just have a basic witch movie that just cuts into this other family without us having any continuity within the film itself.
Exactly. So
that's something I do appreciate with the film.
I think the story of Maria is also super compelling and visceral. Like, I really like it. Like, I feel so bad for Maria. And, like, she's in the movie for, like, a total of what, like a minute and 30 seconds?
Yeah.
But it's just that you feel connected to that character from the very beginning. And then by feeling so connected to her, you feel connected to like her descendants because it's, I don't know. Again, I'm going to tell you, I have no complaints about this movie. There is everything is 10 out of 10, no notes. There's a part that I never really like paid attention to before. I knew what happened, but I just never like paid that much attention to it before. And it's after she jumps from the gallows and mm-hmm. her noose breaks, she stands there for a second and she stares at everybody and she's surprised. They're surprised. Everybody's surprised. And like she just did something, you know, like out of the ordinary, something obviously paranormal. And she could have killed them all. And instead she just left. Like it's, I don't know, like that moment where she jumps from the gallows and her feet hit and mm-hmm. like she stares and then she looks up. It's something like I knew it happened, but it's something I never paid attention for. And I think that that like split little moment of everybody being on the same page there mm-hmm. is like super compelling to me.
I agree, because this is what I thought of though at this scene though too, Courtney, was it's like, okay, you guys get to be stupid over here for judging me for who I am, but I'm going to embrace my freedom as a person, as a woman. And I'm going to walk away from y'all and you guys can go on ahead and bitch and moan about everything that I am and screw y'all. I don't need to be in this town. This town is poisonous to me and I can embrace a new life without you. And she showed mercy yeah. upon them and let them be stupid and let her move on. That's what I
yeah,
got.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what that was.
They were so shocked as though they weren't really, because they were hanging her for being a witch. And mm-hmm. then when she did witchy shit, everyone gasped. like
oh, shit, plot twist. Right.
Yeah, like right. plot twist. She actually is a witch.
This watch through also made me realize that witchcraft and like being a witch, was probably demonized so greatly because it was the first field dominated by women. and men were like, absolutely not.
You know what? There is actually a fan theory here too, okay. that I want to get to as well. Because I think it's actually fascinating on some of these fan theories I do find. Like I found one on Santa Claus where Santa Claus is basically a Time Lord from the Tim Allen movie. So, you know, so there's that. Let me see if I can find that in my notes that I have. So basically, there's the aunts orchestrated Sally and Gary's meeting. Fans speculated that Aunt Jet and Aunt Frances had a hand in bringing Sally and Gary together. They subtly push events forward, knowing Gary fits the qualities of Sally's childhood. Perfect man spell, this theory suggests. They knew it was time for the family curse to be challenged or broken. There's also the curse can be broken through true love. The Owens family curse claims that any man who falls in love with the Owens woman will die. However, some fans theorize that the curse is only activated if the love is untrue or rooted in selfish intentions. The ending of the film suggests that Sally and Gary's love might break the curse because it's genuine and pure, contrasting with past relationships seen in the film. So those are just a few fan theories that I found.
It's a little depressing though to think that the love that she first found wasn't real, or maybe it wasn't mutual.
Right. And we'll get into that too, because I also had thought that myself going into it with the first love that Sandra Bullock's character falls in love with. But yeah, we'll get into that a little bit.
I'm going to throw out a new fan theory that I just thought of. What if the curse could only be broken if a descendant from Maria's original love reconnects with one of the Owens women?
I like that.
So like, what if they like came full circle with where the curse started?
Well, but Maria's love, right? The ancestor who did this whole curse, he must have been a piece of crap because he abandoned his pregnant girlfriend to an island and never came to visit her.
Or they killed him.
Mm.
Mm,
Oh no.
Courtney like, wishes.
Listen, do you, if being a witch could get you hung, do you also think that get you hanged? Do you also think that maybe diddling a witch could also get you hanged?
Okay, now you may have my wheels turning a little bit. Because here's the thing, because if you killed a man in those times, you would actually be considered maybe doing something unheard of to the point where they might think that you're a witch for even killing another man versus it just being, because they'll think that's abnormal for someone to do that, especially a woman.
Well, on the Salem witch trials, there were, what, 3 men that died? Yeah.
It's not impossible. And it's an interesting theory because it would also put a different lens on the whole thing. Cause it's like, oh, he didn't abandon her. He was just dead. You know, that's always an option.
Let me be delusional.
Maybe he didn't ghost you. Maybe he just died.
That's the only acceptable option. He didn't ghost you. He just died.
Right. Except of natural causes, you know,
of unnatural causes.
But, the spell becomes a curse for several generations. Jillian and, Sally Owens, two descendants of the Owen family are taken in by their aunts, Frances and Jet. After the death of their family, Sally is the more gifted of the two, while Jillian's talents are more in charm and persuasion and had many subjects to ridicule during their youth. After witnessing their aunts cast a spell on a man for a woman who seems obsessed with having his love, Jillian decides to fall in love, and Sally casts a true love spell to protect herself. The sisters cast an oath to each other, using blood from both of their hands, and Jillian leaves for Los Angeles. Sally meets and marries Michael, a local apple salesman. And I don't know, and I do not mean the Apple store.
Right. So. Actual apples, people.
Right.
The ones that grow outside where grass lives.
Right.
Rose and I will take this opportunity to correct our last statement regarding what Michael sells. And while I still believe that apples could be considered phallic-shaped vegetables or fruit, they are not what we once thought they were. We were wrong the first time.
We were absolutely joking. We just, because we recapped this movie on our podcast, and we had a clip where we joked that he was pushing a cart full of phallic-shaped vegetables. That was the bit. I thought it was funny to say that. And honestly, I couldn't remember they were apples. I just knew they were some sort of fruit or vegetables. Mm-hmm. And people got mad.
People were like, no, you stupid dumb bitch. Those are apples.
How dare you mess our childhood up thinking of inappropriate stuff. But yeah. But I just thought that, you know, just having the sisters witness, you know, their aunts doing this, and then also the townspeople not being too friendly to them either.
Yeah.
And then treating them as outsiders, just like how generations before them were also treating their family like outsiders. And I just like the fact that, you know, something happens to their parents. They have to move in with their aunt. It's a sad situation, but the aunts are making the best out of it and trying to be there for them. I just love it. I just love the care and how gentle they are. And I forgot the actress that plays one of the characters, but she played on Edward Scissorhands. She just has that. And also too, she also played on The Lost Boys. But I just love the gentleness of her and the nurturing of her, even with the other sister too. I really love them both together. I really love them.
The aunts were great. They were so honest too, to these young girls, which a lot of adults try to shield kids when bad things are happening, but kids are aware that bad things are happening. And the best thing you can do is unpack it with them. And the aunts were like, yes, girls, your dad died because of a curse. Like they were just straight up. They were just telling these 8-year-old girls like, yeah, there's a curse and that's how your dad died. What can we tell you?
I mean, like, honestly, I wish more children could be told that their parents died from a curse rather than something so mundane as a car accident.
Right.
Right.
Cancer.
Like Voldemort. You are the chosen one.
Yeah. Like, at least give them a little bit of, like, pizzazz with their grief.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Also, like, I want to be the aunts when I grow up. It's my goal in life.
Mm-hmm.
is just collectively, I don't care which one, I want to be the ants when I grow up.
That scene where the ants are helping a townswoman do a love spell to get a man to be obsessed with them. Once again, I just marveled kind of at the script of this movie, the storytelling and the screenplay, because I'm like, wow, this scene did so much. Not only did it show us that the ants are, you know, they're actually practicing magic mm-hmm. and the townspeople are aware that they're witches because they're coming to them for help, right. but also, it established right off the bat the personality of the two girls.
It did. It mm-hmm. really did. Because you had the establishment of the fact that the sisters bonding together, breaking and having an oath together. It's like, hey, look, we're going to die together. You know, mm-hmm. and we're going to, that's how we're going to go out. We're going to go out together. We're not going to die separately. And, you know, and I liked how you have, where you have Sandra Bullock's character, where she winds up, you know, which is Sally, where she winds up taking a spell to actually make up a person that she's going to fall in love with to protect her, be the protector of her life. And then you also have her sister, who's also trying to be the protector for Sally right now and as a little girl as well. So you have two things happening at the same time where you are actually looking for someone to protect her while she's also has somebody to protect her right now in childhood. So I like that whole entire future and past and present are going to come in later on. And I love it.
Yeah. You have Jillian, who's just kind of like tra-la-la-la good times. Like Jillian's a go with the flow person. And she's been like that since she was a child. You know, then you have Sally, who found out about, you know, she knew about the curse. And then she saw what love does to some woman when that woman came to her aunt's for the love spell. And she immediately pieced herself out of that with her love spell that she cast on herself, which I think was actually a really ingenious idea for a child. Mm-hmm. Like,
not leaving anything to chance.
Yeah. She was like, oh, so if I fall in love, let's see, I could be this woman banging on a witch's door at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then also the love of my life is going to die because my family's cursed. Let's go ahead and take all the guesswork out of this and cast a love spell for a man who will never exist. And then it'll never be love. It'll just be infatuation. You know, it'll be ignorance.
It'd be like a temporary thing to where she doesn't have to worry about having any type of connectivity with this person for a long period of time. It's basically just putting a wall up and say, hey, look, if this is what love is, I don't want to be near it. I don't want to be even think of the word love. I want to be, and especially with Jillian, she goes, I want to be free spirit. I want to be my own person, my own individual without having to look at, what love is. And especially with this woman's coming in at 1 o'clock in the morning, probably, in tears because my aunt won't help her to actually resurrect her dead husband or boyfriend. And so if this is what it is and it's just temporary anyways, I might as well just go ahead and make my own version of what love is and let it be temporary for me because that's what works for me.
Yeah, which is genius for a child to be like, oh, okay, I see you magic and I raise you intelligence. Absolutely not.
Of course, her idea of, you know, a man who doesn't exist is kind of childlike. Right.
Yeah.
The concepts of like, there couldn't possibly be someone with a green eye and a blue eye, right? She couldn't fathom that. She couldn't fathom that someone could ride a horse backward.
Or have a star, as well. Because at first I'm like, whenever she's making this person up, I remember as a kid, I'm like, what the hell is she talking about? A star? How is that going to even help you? And it didn't put it together until like towards the end where we have that plot twist at the end of, oh, this is the person that she made up. This is the star is actually resembles a sheriff's star. So it makes sense, but in the eyes and lenses of a child who's innocent, it may not make sense to them, but at the same time, their imagination also makes it make sense to them.
And then Jilly just being so enamored by the toxicity of love. Such a red flag and would, you know, definitely come into play later. Just the way her eyes lit up, seeing this very dark scene of like a bird getting killed for this weird love spell and she goes, I can't wait to fall in love. That was everything you needed to know about her right there.
Exactly.
Well, and like, as like, you know, when Jillian leaves and goes away to LA and then like the aunts are worried about Sally, like we knew that the aunts did something mischievous before Sally did because mm-hmm. she was in the garden and they're like, what time is it? What time is it? And then she, like the bells start chiming and they're like, oh, where are you going, dear? Like this kiss starts playing. Obviously, like the music is telling us something's about to happen, but the aunt's behavior is also telling us mm-hmm. that they're in on a secret.
Right. They're in on the secret of helping their niece be able to find love, even though it's temporary.
Just happiness.
Right. It's happiness. And that's all they want for her.
It seems like they broke some rule, some moral code there doing a spell like that. Because you could see how it completely took over Sally and how she almost didn't have control over her own body. And thankfully, it was with someone that she had a genuine attraction to because she did a double take when she first saw the guy in town. But doesn't it feel a little bit like a violation that the aunts did this?
Oh, for sure.
Well, I also feel like this, though, too, is like they made eye contact. You can tell that there's something there. So therefore, eventually, they might have met without having... let the interference of the ants doing what they did. And they could have worked out on its own versus it doing it this way. But it does in a way feel like they put themselves out there and said, okay, well, instead of letting it be, let's be patient with it. It's like, okay, let's just hurry up and let's get this thing started. I want happiness for my niece.
Can you imagine?
They have 2 years of marriage together.
Can you imagine that guy was married with 2 kids and he just like ghosted his wife and just went to hook up with Sandra Bullock?
She's at home like, motherfucker, better be dead.
Right. You're going out with that witch woman, huh? But I could just see this though. Like, sorry guys, I gotta go. Where are you going? I don't know. I just gotta go.
Yeah.
I gotta go to this garden. I got to wave to this, I have to go out to the middle of the city. I don't know why. I just gotta go. Dad, what about pizza night? It's okay, kids. Here's $5. I have to go.
Is that what happens with dads when they go out to get milk and never come back?
They just find a new wife.
Well, someone put a spell on them. It's not their fault.
Right, exactly. It's not their fault.
Rose.
Sandra Bullock collecting dads like Infinity Stones.
It's like, which dad do I need? Right. But I do like the setup though.
One, I don't think Sally ever would have taken that jump, ever. I think she might have started to feel something for him, and then she would have been like, oh, he's gonna die, click. And she would have been like, no, absolutely not. So I think that without the aunt's interference, Sally never would have made that leap.
True. Yeah, that's very true. And I think that their marriage would have actually lasted longer if they didn't meddle. Because of that beetle. Yeah. Because think of it like this, they meddled into this whole entire conception of the fact that they want something for their niece, right? That she wanted to be happy. But what if, I'm just saying this, what if for the fact that they did meet out on their own terms, what happens if that was actually the way of breaking the curse?
Oh, and no, that's such a good point.
Right, and because here's the thing, the beetle was making the noise because of the consequences with what the ants were doing. So what I'm thinking is, if you get rid of that whole entire aspect, you have them falling in love on their own terms, you have them breaking in the curse, but because of this interference, that's what caused the curse to happen.
Maybe, but we don't know how Sally's parents met. So we don't know if the ants interfered there either. But then that would also mean that Gary is doomed too.
Well, according to that fan theory.
Right.
But we'll get to Gary.
Right. We'll get to him soon. But the other thing that makes me wonder is like, okay, well, how long did Sally's and Jillian's parents last? Was it 2 years as well for them as well? Or was it more? So it makes you wonder about that aspect as well. But, you know, so now we're getting into, after witnessing their aunt's cast spell. Okay. So years later, the two open their bontinial shop, and have 2 young daughters, Kylie and Atonia. Michael is killed after being hit by a truck. Sally and her daughters return to the Owens home to live with the aunts and realize that the aunts cast a spell so she could fall in love. Sally decides that she and her daughters will not perform magic as Jillian begins a relationship with Jimmy Douchebag in Orlando. Sally is devastated by her husband's death. Jillian feels that Sally needs her and drugs Jimmy to return to Massachusetts.
Yeah,
so we have a lot of setup there.
Yeah, it was done so well. Again, it was so organic the way they gave us all this exposition because Sally and Jilly are long distance. So they're writing letters to each other. And I love that idea because it's an organic way to communicate exposition. You're writing a letter to your, to your sister in the '90s, you know?
Yeah. Especially 1998, you know? Yeah.
Right.
I don't understand why Jillian didn't come back for a funeral. I would be devastated if my sister didn't return for my husband's funeral.
I wonder if she did and that was cut out.
That might be.
It doesn't sound like it.
Actually, you're right. I don't think she did because she was nervous to see the daughters when she came back later. So she hadn't seen them.
And she didn't know it. All she knew was her sister lost her husband and that was it. And she has to be there for her sister.
So, right, but it seems, I just wonder, it gives me so many questions because it almost seemed like Jilly didn't find out until much later.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like Jilly was semi-estranged.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Jilly got dickmatized.
Big time.
Yeah. And I like how the answer over there talking about how Jillian just goes through one guy after another. That's also another thing that we see when Sally winds up banging into the guy that he falls in love with is the fact of, I wish that my sister would just settle down and just stop going through different guys, you know? But, you know, then she winds up meeting Jimmy Angelov, and you can definitely tell that this guy's off. Mm-hmm. Just by the way he looks, he has that, and you know what?
You know the crazy eyes.
Not only the crazy eyes though, Rose, but think of it like this. The guy's sitting in a shadowy thing. He's full of darkness while Jillian is full of light in a sense, even though she's very free-spirited. Mm-hmm. You have this darkness within her light meets dark.
Yeah.
And within that, she gets lost in it. And especially how his eyes glow. In the shadows as well. He has that glare of like, okay, this guy's an asshole. He's going to do something that she's going to regret later.
Just the intensity, I think, is a big red flag. And a lot of young women don't know this because it's like the love bombing, you know, where it's like, oh my God, he's so intense. He's so obsessed with me. He wants to follow me into the bathroom. He doesn't want to be apart for 2 seconds. It's like, no, babe, those are red flags actually.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and I think that a lot of, especially like girls who are younger, it's obvious that Jimmy's probably, I don't want to say quite a bit older, but I feel like there's definitely somewhat of an age gap there. Mm-hmm. He's probably at least what, like 5 to 8 years older than Jillian.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize it is that the love bombing is so toxic. And by the time you realize that it's toxic, you're already in it. Like you are so deep in it that you can't leave. Like you can't just be like, I think we should break up, babe. Like, I think I'm going to go my way. You go your way.
Yeah.
And I think that they take that obsession as like, look how obsessed we are with each other. Oh my God. It's like so intense. I think Jillian even uses the word intense, which
she does.
Him to Sally. She's like, he's so intense.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you're in danger.
Right.
You're actually in danger.
You're in danger, babe.
And it had to be her sister Sally has to be the one who has to tell her, hey, look, you're in danger here. You're being with a narcissistic asshole and you're not seeing the red flags, you know?
Yeah. Jilly says some nights we're awake all night worshiping each other. Then she talks about how she has to give him belladonna, which don't do that at home, kids. That is dangerous. She has to give him belladonna so she can get some shut eye. And I'm like, what? And then she's like, he's just so much stronger than me. And I'm like,
yeah.
What?
What?
What? Hey, that's exactly. Assault.
Like, if you have to drug the guy that you're with, that's not a good sign that you need to go on ahead and be with this person at all, because this person's not good for you.
I actually has a really...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was actually wondering if maybe that's why Jilly didn't come back for the funeral. Maybe she couldn't. Maybe he wouldn't let her go.
Ooh. Yeah, I know. That's probably right. Maybe she couldn't. Jilly has a really insecure attachment style. It's like, you think it's a personality trait, but it's actually trauma, babes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing that I thought that was really creepy was I never would have thought that I would actually find an Elvis song really creepy and eerie than that whole entire ride.
Yeah.
That was just really creepy. And we're going to get into that now, where Jillian returns to Sally and Jimmy becomes abusive, but the sisters are kidnapped. Sally puts Belladonna into Jimmy's tequila and killing him. The sisters resurrect him using the forbidden spell from their aunt's book of spells, but Jimmy's attempt to kill Jillian after being revived. Sally kills him again, and the sisters bury his remains in their garden. Mm-hmm. And so this part where they're thinking they're home free, and then here's Jimmy in the back of the car, and he tells Sally to drive. Mm-hmm. And you have Always on My Mind playing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the background, this scene is so creepy and so eerie that it just feels like the Elvis song just kind of slows down, like a demonic kind of song now. It does not even feel like a happy song. It now feels like it's now... basically, what's the word I'm thinking of? It's basically just demonic. Because of this guy.
Yeah. No, it is really eerie. And I guess context is important, right? Like, if you have a really creepy guy singing about how you are always on his mind, doesn't hit the same, right?
No. No.
Well, not good intentions.
I've noticed that when you hear music in a tone or a key that it's not meant to be in, it doesn't vibrate. Yeah. I heard Kiss the Girl from Little Mermaid in C minor. It's the creepiest, rapiest song I've ever heard in my life.
That's like, a good point.
Yeah. In Little Mermaid, it's a bop. It's a vibe. Right. When you change it to C minor, it's
changes the atmosphere.
Yeah,
it changes the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So while Elvis sings it beautifully, Jimmy Angelo singing it while he's taking a piss in an industrial yard after he kidnapped you, definitely not vibing the way I would really like to be vibing at the moment.
Yeah.
But no, what I was going to ask you guys was this, okay? So what did you think of the whole fact of, okay, she drugged him, now they're going over to the aunt's house again.
I think that Sally and everybody made the right decision as far as taking him back and reviving him. I think they should have called the cops after she beat him over the head with the cast iron skillet.
Me too.
I'm sorry. You think they made the right decision by transporting a dead body across state lines with the intention of performing a spell they didn't know was going to work? Do you think that was the right choice?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I think they should have called 911. Honestly, I honestly think they could have just left him on the side of the road.
They don't have... Well, no, he took the keys.
Yeah, he took the keys.
Okay.
And there's no cell phones or anything either in this time either. So it's not like you can say, hey, look, I have a douchebag that tried to... I kill my sister in the back seat, and we had to actually drug him to lay his hands off of her. So therefore, what do? And you're also panicking at this time. You're not in the best mindset either. So it's like, well, we're witches. What do? Well, let's do what we know best.
When you have magic and a resurrection spell is on the table.
And this will get us off the hook because he'll be revived.
Yeah, I guess if I had magic, I would find a way to plant evidence to point to someone else, like let's frame someone for the homicide. How about that?
Find another scumbag and frame a different scumbag for the scumbag's murder.
Yes.
You're right. I love that. Two birds, one murder.
But two birds, one murder. But I understand that in the moment, you know, they were panicked. They didn't know what to do. And then Jilly had the idea of like, let's bring him back. He's evil anyway. How much worse can it get?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what she said. Sally was like, no, the aunt said he'll come back as something dark and unnatural. And Jilly's like, Jimmy's already dark and unnatural.
Right. Exactly. What more can we not do to this guy that's even more dark than what he is right now? So,
But I think I
get that.
I think once he was in the house and he tried to strangle her, I think that after she beat him over the head with the pan, they should have called the police and been like, hey, listen, he kidnapped us. He made us drive here. And then he started strangling Jilly. And then I hit him in the head with the pan. And I think once that other cop got involved, because he knew he would have, because Jimmy was on the radar, they would have been like, yeah, that checks out. That's what Jimmy does.
Right.
Okay.
And also, too, what I want to know is what family member hired up a PI to look for this guy as well. It's like, it's not like this asshole is like he has any kind of loving family that's going to be looking for Jimmy or anything.
He was investigating other murders, I think.
He was a prosecutor.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I was just thinking to myself, why would anyone care about him? But
yeah.
Also, that was quick. That was quick.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she hit him over the head like three times with the frying pan just to let him go. And then they wind up burying him outside. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, at this point, they're like, okay, we're good to go. We don't have anything else to worry about. We buried him and that's the end. You know,
three is a magical number. She couldn't have done it any more, any less, you know.
Just the idea that they could have called the cops at that moment and been like, oh yeah, ignore the freaking pentagram, you know, carved into his chest and ignore his previous cause of death.
Well, you his know? Previous right. cause of death was, a belladonna overdose. So like that might be out of his system by now.
Well, might have, like, also too, like with that, like, well, maybe they didn't give him the proper dosage to have an OD because of his body weight and size. So therefore, you know, he woke up out of his coma sleep.
Oh my gosh, you think he wasn't dead? You think he wasn't dead to begin with?
That might be a good alibi. Is like, you know, that's what I was thinking. It was like, maybe they didn't give him enough for his body size and stuff. So what happens is he comes out of his coma from the drug, and then he winds up strangling Jillian for the fact that she poisoned him.
Yeah. Look at us, alibi queens.
They were with us. They didn't do it.
Innocent. That was a belladonna. That was melatonin, and he asked for some.
He said, please put the whole jar in my bottle of liquor. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, that's it.
He wanted to go take a nap. And then I don't even want him to do any of this witchcraft stuff. This weirdo over here with the skull ring, he asked me
to
carve that pentagram on his chest. I didn't want to.
Well, then he grabbed that frying pan and hit himself upside the head multiple times.
He's so much bigger than I am.
Officer, it was weird. Look at us.
We're just a girl.
We're just girls. You think we did this?
We're just girls.
You think we did a double murder on one person?
I buy it.
Not after this episode. They're going to be like, those bitches did it.
But, you know, they bury him in the Holmes garden. Then after that, we have state investigator Gary Hollett arrives from Tucson, Arizona, in search of Jimmy, who is also a serial killer.
Yeah.
As Gary begins to suspect Sally, Jillian, Kylie, and Tonya create a potion to banish Gary. However, the girls realize that he is the one described in Sally's true love spell and removes the potion. So I love this scene where so they realize, oh shit, this is actually the guy that my mom's supposed to fall in love with. Mm-hmm. And because of the innocence of the child and because they believe in that, they go on ahead, and I like how, you know, you have the breakfast scene where he's flipping the pancakes, spending time with the kids, and the kids are loving him, but I also like how he's also investigating the...
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Town as well, mm-hmm. with the placentas and stuff. Yeah. And oh yeah, they jump off their house on Halloween and stuff like that. There really are crazy people. And yeah, that made me laugh though about how much that he didn't believe them, but also too of all the crazy stories he's hearing around the town.
Yeah, those townspeople are like, oh no, like she's not saying that Sally and Jillian killed him. They're just saying that maybe they shook his hand and then he died later and he's mm-hmm. in a ditch. That's.
Yeah. The interview montage was really fun. It was really fun because the townspeople were so excited that somebody was finally investigating these witches, you know, like someone's finally getting to the bottom of it.
Magic is not against the law currently.
Mm, right, but you know what else though? Is like he's an outsider, so somebody's finally, that's an outsider that doesn't live in this town, so therefore now they can be put to jail. So mm-hmm. we have that too going on in their heads as well. And then even whenever Jillian and Sally are up inside the little town meeting thing that Sally wants to be a part of too, I like how they're talking shit about Jillian. Oh, she's got a snake on her tattoo on her arm and stuff. And things like that too. So you have the townspeople talking shit about her, but Sally's also still trying to fit into a society that does not even want her and rejecting right. her.
She's trying to suppress her witchiness. Do you know, on this rewatch, for the first time, I felt like there was a scene missing because so before Officer Hallett comes to interview Sally at the house, mm-hmm. Sally has been so nervous, just so like flustered and stuff. But then that particular morning, she seems so confident and so comfortable. And she's actually very charming. Like you could see him falling in love with her in real time. And I felt like there was a scene missing. Like what happened to make her go from being terrified about getting caught to suddenly being like, you know what? Ask whatever you want. Did we kill him? Yeah, a couple times.
Yeah.
That made me laugh.
Twice. Do we know where his body is? It's not in this house, you know? Be more specific, okay?
Right.
I get what you mean about how she was kind of a flustered mess and then she just went all zen. And it honestly feels like big sister mode took over. Mm. And she was like, I need to keep me and Jilly out of jail. And she knows he's been talking to everybody in the town. And she's like, I have to lean into it now. Mm-hmm. And she intimidates the hell out of Officer Hallett. She intimidates him and he's into it.
You're right. Maybe she realizes for the first time that her reputation is a tool, an intimidation tool. Mm. Because Jilly uses her sexuality as an intimidation tool. And we have to talk about Nicole Kidman just oozing horniness like in every role Oof. She's ever had, because my God, this woman's just like,
she walks into that PTA meeting and says, hide your husbands, hide your wives too. Okay?
I hid my husband. I hid my husband. He wasn't even in the movie. I was like, yeah. I need to put you in a closet for right now.
She's but, like, they walk away. This movie's not
you know
for
what
you.
Though? This is what I was thinking. Okay. I was thinking because of the fact it was that love spell that she had from when she was a little girl, mm-hmm. where she feels comfortable with him to open up to him and her guard is down yeah. because of it. So that's what I was thinking. I was thinking of the fact of there's that connection there, even though she doesn't know that there's a connection there or anything because she doesn't see it yet. So I was thinking because of that, I was thinking, well, of course her walls would be broken and stuff like that is because of the fact she feels comfortable enough to actually tell him what's going on, even though she also has to step up and be a big sister to Jillian and stuff like that and say, hey, look, this is what happened. And he's even telling her, look, do not tell me anything because you need a lawyer.
Yeah.
You need a lawyer up.
See, Sally told Jilly the very first time he came to the house to talk to them. She's like, I don't think I can lie to him. And Jilly was like, yes, you can. Of course you can. And then when he asked about the car, and Jilly's like, oh, that's my car. And Sally breaks, she folds like a wet paper bag immediately. And she's like, mm-hmm. okay, yeah, no, we stole his car. So sorry. We would love to give it back to him. If you can find him, please mm-hmm. take it. But I think you're right about the connection to where she feels that pull to him and she's like, maybe he won't arrest me. Like maybe it'll be okay.
What do you think though, Rose?
I think a prosecutor who, first of all, why is the prosecutor investigating the crime? He's the prosecutor, right? That's what he said.
He said he's with the prosecutor's office.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. So he's investigating, but I've never heard an investigator ever say, stop talking to me, get an attorney. Like I've never heard that before. So it's obvious that like he didn't want them to get in trouble for this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I'm also curious why he jumped to the conclusion that they killed him, because the most natural conclusion would be they're hiding him. This is his girlfriend. He's on the run. He's wanted for murder. Where is he hiding? But that's not where his mind goes. His mind goes, where's his body? You killed him, right?
Well, right. See, he took the, before the car was towed from their house, he took a sample of stuff that was spilled on the front seat and sent it off to be tested. And that stuff was belladonna that Sally spilled. And then right. he probably looked into what belladonna was used for. And that's why he was like, oh, belladonna's used also to poison people. So I think he might be like, I'm going to go out. Belladonna is a sedative used to poison people. They have a shit ton of it here in this house. Maybe.
Well, also too, you have Jillian who also has a black eye still from her ex. So maybe he's putting two and two together with that though too. But I was also, why would she hide someone that she got where the boyfriend winds up abusing her?
Right, yeah.
So that's also another thing.
I think a lot, if it was just Jilly, I would think he would probably be more concerned that she was hiding him, because that is sort of like something that was more likely to happen. You know, like he hits her, he apologizes, you know, she has that attachment to him, and you know, he has been love bombing her since the beginning. She's probably like, this is the first time he's hit me, you know, he won't do it again. He said he's sorry. He loves me. I can hide him. So if it was just Jilly, I don't think he would have thought he was dead. I think right. he would have went straight to, where is your boyfriend? I know you're hiding him.
True. But since it's the sister and Jillian, yeah, since it's Sally and Jillian, yeah, that's a different turn of events. I definitely agree with you on that.
I'm just saying, if my sister came to me with a black eye and some guy hit her, I don't know where he is either.
Same. I probably actually hit the guy over the head with a shovel and, you know, he fell and landed in a ditch somewhere in the garden.
He threw himself in front of my Hyundai Sonata. Okay.
It was the weirdest thing, Your Honor.
He stabbed himself four times in the back and he ended up falling into the garden.
Listen, I was just trying to leave with my sister and he threw himself behind my vehicle when I was backing up.
Ooh, I have a question. Mm-hmm. So obviously when Jilly and Sally bury, what's his last name? I almost said Lovegood. I almost said Lovegood. That's Harry Potter. when they bury him, he starts to haunt them, right? Like this right. rose bush, this very thorny rose bush starts growing overnight. One of the little girls can see him. He's haunting them. And I'm curious, do we think that this is happening because of the second spell that they did that brought him back to life and that made him mm-hmm. evil? Or do we think he was evil to begin with? What if he, like, if we're in a world, like right now we're in a universe where magic is real. So wouldn't it stand to reason that demons are real? Like, what if he was actually a demon?
That actually Oof. Does kind of make sense because, like I said, there, that he does was make like, sense. In that, yeah. Because he was in that shadowy place, you know what I'm talking about? at the start of it. Yeah, it does.
The way they portrayed him, the way they portrayed him was very supernatural before he died, even.
Right. I do see that, and especially with him being obsessed with vampires and stuff like that and into that whole entire deal as well. You know, let's see here. We do have something. Michael says, hi, unfortunately, on October 16, 1998, I went to see Bride of Chucky rather than Practical Magic. I've also seen Bride of Chucky instead of Practical Magic myself, sadly.
So listen, I saw the first Child's Play movie that I ever saw. I saw when I was four. And it still haunts me. I've seen 1, 2, 3 and The Bride of Chucky. And I still, like, I know I could punt that little plastic bastard if I really needed to. Like, he's a doll. Put him in the oven. He's gone. Yeah. But still, any doll with red hair, not in this house.
Yeah. We forgive you for choosing Bride of Chucky over Practical Magic. There is still time to atone for your sins.
Exactly. Go on ahead and rent this on YouTube for $4. So there you go.
Or you can buy it.
Or you can buy it.
I think it's cheaper on Amazon Prime, actually. It was like three something. Yeah. Actually, okay. $2.79 or something like that. So.
Not bad. But yeah, then we actually have later Sally and Gary record their testimony and sees the letters she had once written to Jillian and realizes he must have read it more times than he had and led on, unable to deny their feelings for each other. They kiss and Sally realizes that he was there because of the spell she cast years earlier. Sally discovers that Jimmy's spirit has possessed Jillian's body and Gary sees Jimmy's spirit emerge. Jimmy attempts to possess Gary, only to be hurt by his silver star shaped badge and is temporarily exiled. So let's talk about the fact that we already talked about the fact that she was going into the hotel room, she's confessing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I like how now she realizes now that Gary's very up close now. And she's like, wait, one green eye, one blue eye. She goes, wait, you're someone that I made up years ago as a kid. Yeah. And then she pulls out the star. But I also like how she also tells him when she pulls out the star the first time, he goes, there's a lot of power in this, isn't there? You can arrest people. And it may not stop the murder, but in your mind, it shows that you have power. So why can't we be who we are and show that we have power too?
Yeah. It's a talisman. She said it has power because you think it has power, and it's actually really cute when you think about it that she's like, oh, your little toy, it kind of makes you a little witch too. You know, you hold it up in front of people that are coming at you with weapons. You're like, stop where you are. I have a star, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, that is what a badge of any sort is, you know, is a talisman. It's an object that gives you power. You know, even if that's social power.
And authority, yeah.
Yeah, it gives you authority. And I love when the little girls take the syrup that Jilly put her spell in and they're like, oh no. And then they go and they like dump it out into the ocean and they're so proud of themselves. But like the girls obviously know about Gary. I think that the scene where, you know, right after that, where Sally chases him back to his hotel, to confess to him and they start kissing. I don't even think I noticed who goes in for the kiss first. I think it's him.
It's him. And then after that's her. And then they're like, this is a big mistake. We shouldn't be doing this. And then they wind up kissing again. And then they're on top of the bed and yeah.
So did he have a contact of fallout? Is that what happened? Mm-mm. That's what she just noticed for the first time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah. Right. She just noticed. And then also she saw him flipping that pancake earlier and he had the star and she's putting it together and she's like, oh no, 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 no. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I have to go now. This is a bad idea.
Yeah.
So
Sally has a way of knowing when Jilly's in danger. We see it earlier in the movie when she first rescues Jilly. And then this time she gets this sensation as she hears her girls crying.
That's true.
Yeah, she gets back to that house and like the girls are terrified because Jilly is straight like exorcism, like arching off the bed. She's doing everything but like projectile vomiting onto a priest.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. I'm so glad that, Officer Hallett was able to witness this because I don't know any sort of, account, secondhand account was going to make him believe that this actually happened. I think this was the moment when he was like, oh, okay. Yeah, you guys are getting away with this.
Exactly. There's no way that I can actually put, say, hey, look, there was a supernatural being that came at me and I put a star whenever the supernatural being came at me and I put, and he wanted to touch my star and it ended up frying his hand. I cannot put that on my notes. So therefore we have to go on a technicality of you having self-defense or something else for that matter. Because I cannot do this.
I wonder how an officer or a detective or the FBI would actually put on a report about something paranormal happening. Like, how do you write that up? Like, is there a paranormal department where they're like, hey, if anything seems kind of fucky, it goes to Jim. I just want to know. Like, listen, cause I'm sure it's happened before.
Yeah. Is there a paranormal department? The X-Files.
I wouldn't be surprised. Probably there, Area 51 files somewhere.
The CIA has actually, they had an entire project on astral projection. So like they're, at least the CIA is in on it. Like they actually hired psychics to come and like try and figure things out by they would give them a date and they would write a date and a place on a piece of paper or put it in an envelope and then they would hand the envelope over and the psychic could like touch the envelope and they would say, tell me what you see. And so, you know, they would write down like control things to make sure the psychic was legit and then they would write down things in the future. And then with the astral projection, they were actually trying to use them as spies.
Oh, wow.
And so like, obviously the CIA knows the paranormal is on the up and up. But I don't think that they're going to share that with small town police. You know, could you imagine somebody being arrested in Mississippi and they're like, okay, but it was the demon.
Yeah, they're going to put that person going up to Hattiesburg about 45 minutes away and putting them in an institution before they even believe in anything. No one's going to believe that. And, you know, I really like how that gets played out like that, where it's like, okay, you guys are getting away with it. I have no choice but to. But I also like how I actually had the subtitles on. There was actually a part where Sally goes on ahead and confronts him before they get over to the hotel. He goes, this is like being on the Twilight Zone. He mentions the Twilight Zone in part of his dialogues talking underneath his breath. I don't know if you guys heard that or anything, but he's mumbling underneath his breath because this is like the Twilight Zone. I don't know what to do. This town is weird.
That was a very timely reference in 1998.
Yep. I love how she tells him that he needs to go and like leave her, like arrest me, whatever. But like, a personal thing between us can't happen because I'm always going to wonder if it's because of my spell and you're always going to wonder if it's because I didn't want to go to prison.
Yeah.
And I think that's so sad because you know, part of her is probably always wondering.
Yeah. But then also, girl, I mean, come on. Like there's a real chance at this point because when that happens, he hasn't seen the paranormal entity yet. At that point, she had basically confessed to him and there was a really good chance that she really could go to jail. I don't know. Like, put your whole punani in it at this point. Like, you like right, him, exactly. He likes you. Like, you know, why are you being coy at this point?
Right, exactly. There's... You already pretty much broke your own code by kissing her and everything. You might as well just go for the full nine and just forget about the case and throw it out the window altogether because you just complicated your whole entire case.
I was struck actually by how, so this is PG-13, the movie, but I was struck how easily this movie could have been rated R.
It could have turned rated R right then and there in that one hotel room just with that one scene.
It could have, and yeah, and also with the, I keep wanting to call him Love Good, whatever his name is, Love Angel, Angel Love, Angel Love.
Angelo?
Yeah, and yeah, there could have been.
Yeah, Angelo. Yeah.
Yeah, there could have been some rated R scenes with them as well, like him and Jilly.
I like how they play it off safe like that, though. It was just enough to where we didn't need to see anything at all. We already know they have a sexual relationship. We already established the relationship between them and how abusive he is without having to show us anything.
Right. That's such
a good point. I liked.
Yeah, it's a lot more artful to be able to just imply things. Like, they implied like heavy, heavy sexual situations without ever once showing a sex scene.
Exactly. Because now it'll be over sexualized and stuff like that to the point where it's mostly geared towards that versus it being about the art and what the chemistry between the douchebag and also Jillian. And then there's also the same thing when it comes down to Sally and also Gary as well.
Right.
So I'm glad that they did a simplistic type of way of actually doing it versus it showing us everything. I feel like less is more. You don't have to shoehorn everything in to show a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also those scenes would have come at a cost. Something else would have had to be cut.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I'm happy with
and we might not decisions. Even have the innocence of those children doing what they did with the syrup that might actually get cut for that sex scene. So now it no longer feels like a movie that you would actually share with someone in junior high like me at the time or anything. And now is feeling something different and different in tone, and it's more geared towards adults versus someone like me. Like,
this was actually based off a book.
Okay.
I didn't know that. But you know, then there's Jimmy possesses Jillian again and attempts to kill Sally before Francis and Jet return. And because remember, Sally and Jet winds up leaving and goes, look, you're going to clean up your own mess.
Yeah.
We're not putting up with this. And I also like the little margarita thing at 12 o'clock and midnight and everything and sneaking Sally and Jillian downstairs. I love that aspect to it too. Sally, realizing she must embrace magic to save her sister, asks the aid of the town's women, and they form a coven to exercise Jimmy's spirit. Sally makes them stop when she sees that the effort might kill Jillian. Getting inside the circle, Sally and the townswoman reenact her oath with Jillian. They are able to break the Owens curse, exorcising Jimmy's spirit and allowing the coven to exile him permanently. Sally receives a letter from Gary telling her that she and her sister are cleared of any suspicion of wrongdoing in Jimmy's case, and Gary returns to Massachusetts to be with Sally. The Owens women celebrate All Hallows Eve, dress up in witch costumes, and are embraced and welcomed by the town folk.
I love the fact that Sally is able to form an impromptu coven to help her sister get rid of her evil ex. That's just girlhood, I feel like.
Yeah. You know?
That's like girlhood.
No matter how you feel about another girl, like, you get that call and they're like, hey, we need your help getting rid of my sister's crazy ex. Also, I am a witch. I need you to come over and participate with me. Like, talk less. I'll be there. Is like, you don't even have to know a girl for her to hate a man who's bothering you.
This actually made me want to participate in the PTO just in the off chance that someone is a witch and needs like an impromptu coven. Cause I would love to be like in the hall tree and to be called like, hey, we need your immediate assistance.
I can see that. I like that.
John is like, can't relate to wanting.
No, I can't. And I'm trying to, but I was like, I don't have no relation to this. But, you know, though, I do like the stuff of women coming together to fight against something that is dark and trying to help this woman out. Even though they had their differences, they found a balance to actually help somebody in need versus to judge somebody like they've been doing in the past. So if they have to get rid of some asshole for this one person, then they'll do it. because of the fact. And then also too, you also have ownership of, hey, look, I'm a witch. Everything you said about me is true. And I like how the blonde haired girl from the movie Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito calls up the other townswoman. She just came out. And I cracked up laughing.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that she's owning up to it now. She's not hiding who she is. And I think that's what really pissed off the townspeople. It's like, we know who you are. Mm-hmm. Why are you hiding who you are from us when we know who you are? So I feel like the modern day townspeople are more pissed off at the fact that they're hiding who they are versus them suspiciously. You know how back in the 1800s, they were actually hanging people for thinking that they are who they are. But now they know who they are in present time. So there's a difference in balance between that, I think.
Yeah, part of it was the townspeople feeling gaslit. But I think also there's a part to like hatred and kind of this hostility that they had that really had to do with them feeling on the outside of something. And you see that a lot, like whenever there's a group of people that have a thing and it's their thing and they feel special and they feel connected, there's always another group that's like, we hate that. And I think that's really where that hate for witches come from, because they obviously weren't scared of them, because if you're scared of someone, you're not taunting them.
No.
You know what I mean? So it's not fear, it's jealousy. It's like, you know, I hate that you're a witch because I want to be a witch.
Exactly. You're inherited into this family and I want to be part of it, but I can't be part of it. Mm-hmm. So this sucks for me, but it's good for you. So therefore I'm going to be jealous of you.
Yeah. I think maybe the witch, you're a bitch taunts probably didn't help like the Owen sisters not gaslight the town people. but also like the one girl, the blonde chick who the mean one, like the head of the PTO, when she came over, she was like, you know, I've always wanted to see inside this house. Like, oh, you just chose to be a mean girl instead of being like, hey, can I come over and hang out? Like, you didn't have to be this way. Even as an adult, you're still a mean girl.
Yeah. My petty ass would have never called her. I would have skipped right over her name.
You and I are on the same page, Rose. I'm like, why would you want this woman to help you? She was against you this whole time. I'm like, okay, there's other people within this tree that I could actually go to versus her. In this town, I don't need her broom to help sweep up the ashes from the asshole. Because I can actually get somebody else that's not an asshole to sweep up the asshole.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like asshole inception, you know?
Yeah. One of the things I really did like was when the ants came back, you know, before the ants left the message with the little girls, you know, tell your mom and your aunt, clean up their own messes. And I think that, I guess a parent, that's such a hard lesson to have to teach your kid is clean up your own mess, whether that's your clothes, your dishes, or a dead body, you know, like it's hard. To, you know, kind of instill that in your kids of clean up your own mess and have to let them flounder and fail. Like that's such a hard lesson, but like the ants came back and they were like, okay, we let you flounder enough. We're here to assist now. And I really appreciate that they did return when they knew like, okay, the girls have struggled enough and now they need the aunties to come and help them.
They did offer to help from the beginning, but Sally and Jilly wouldn't tell them what was going on.
Right. They're like, okay.
Which is like, honestly would have pissed me the hell off too. Cause you're in my house and you're doing weird shit that's having an effect on me, because the ants were in a trance during the whole Midnight Margaritas thing and they realized it after Jilly broke the bottle. So they're like, what's happening? Like you're casting weird stuff in my house that's affecting me and then you're not telling me? I would be pissed.
Oh yeah.
Because remember, they were possessed by that bottle, like you mentioned, Rose. And they were singing that Elvis song too, and then if it wasn't for them crashing the bottle and everything, they would have not even known what it was happening to them. And then it's all about the consequences of, hey, look, you're doing this weird shit in my house. You're welcome to my house, but you're not allowed to do this in my house. You're being disrespectful towards me. So why should I help you? And then even whenever you have the frog that actually pukes out the ring as well, and then you also have the feet that pops up out of the ground and then goes back into the ground. So you have all this stuff happening within the house itself and being disrespectful towards your aunt, and you're wanting to hide everything from your aunt when your aunt already knows what's going on in your house. It's like trying to hide stuff from your mom or your dad, and your dad, mom or dad already know what you did. Yeah. All they want you to do is confess.
Listen, the aunts, 10 out of 10 would have helped them hide a body. Like, no questions asked. They would have helped them hide a body in a better way than just burying it. They also would have been like, hey, just in case, we're going to come in clutch and we're going to cast some of these other spells to make people think they've seen him in other places. We're going to do this. Like, the aunts would have came in so, they would have came with all the answers. All the girls had to do was trust them.
Yeah. Do you think Sally didn't, cause it was, it seemed to be Sally's decision when the aunts were like, what's happening? Jilly looked at Sally and Sally was like, we had a problem when we handled it and she didn't want to go into it. And I'm curious now hearing Courtney say that, if the reason is that Sally felt like a hypocrite, because the whole time that she's been living with the aunts, she said, you know, my kids will not do magic. We don't do magic. You know, I'm not a witch, whatever. And then she obviously did witchy shit that got them in trouble. So I wonder if this whole mess was really just like Sally's pride of not wanting to admit that she used magic to try to solve a problem.
Right. And I think that's, that does make her hypocritical towards her aunts because of the fact that she doesn't want her kids to be around magic, but yet she's going to help her sister do magic to cover up her sister's mistakes. So therefore, yeah, you're being hypocritical towards your aunts, your own family, your own blood that could actually have your back. So yeah, I definitely agree with you on that.
No, that does that definitely checks out for me, is that she just didn't want to feel like a hypocrite.
So what do you guys think about Jillian being possessed and then they have to go ahead and lock hands together with the blood to get Jimmy out of her? I thought it was really good. I thought the special effects were really good for it. I even loved how Jimmy, whenever we see him as a ghost and everything too, I thought that was really creepy as well with the special effects. I thought it was really good on how we actually have that closed door now, and now Jillian's free of him, and they're also sweeping the ashes out of the house, which also makes it to where they're innocent because the ashes are basically swept out of the area.
Yeah, I think it's just girly things, to be honest with you. That's what we would all do, John. I don't know why you can't grasp that this is what we would all do.
Well, you know me, I'm a guy, so.
So, as somebody who is a practitioner of certain crafts, sweeping things out the back door, is actually really symbolic. So like you sweep, like you blow cinnamon into your front door and then you sweep bad vibes out your back door. So like they just swept all the bad vibes out. But like it goes back to what Rose said earlier of was Jimmy actually a demon? Because this didn't feel like his spirit is haunting us. This feels like should we have called a priest? Because that's possession. Like that, it feels really ominous and really eerie, like Jimmy taking over Jilly. And so I wonder even more now seeing this second scene where he's taken over Jilly to where like, I think he might have been a demon to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. It was more than like a haunting, but also it could be attributed to that crazy spell that they did. Right. They were warned that bringing someone back from the dead, they could come back as something dark and unnatural. So it could be explained with that. But I love the theory that he was a demon to begin with, because again, this is a universe where magic is real. And once you open up that Pandora's box, what else is real? If witches are real, what else is real?
Jilly said he's already dark and unnatural. So honestly, his behavior before and after he died, not much different.
Right.
That's very true. I mean, this is a supernatural type of movie with stuff. We even talked about how atmospheric it is, stuff like that within its own self. So yeah, I like that theory a lot better than the ones I found. So I think this will be a new fan theory that I can post on Reddit.
Give you guys credit for it. Report because, back.
Seriously, I love the theories that you guys have. For real. Thanks. Because I like these a lot better than the ones I found. And it also makes a lot more sense. Because I found the ones on Reddit a lot more bland. And I'm like, this does not make sense. This is someone that's just trying to have that big, huge conspiracy wall and trying to put arrows everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But yours, what you guys came out with is a lot more, makes a lot more sense.
You are braver than I am. I am a Reddit lurker. Mm-hmm. I do not post on Reddit. I will dive down some pretty deep rabbit holes. But yeah. I don't post on there because someone's going to be like, no, you stupid dumb bitch.
Yeah,
it's wrong.
Hosting on Reddit is a whole other level of brave.
Trust me, I did it whenever I first started out in podcasting. It's like, I actually got kicked out of a community and I didn't even realize I was in a community because I didn't understand how Reddit worked.
Oh, no.
So it's like, this is shit. I'm like, well, I felt good about it, but I'm sorry that you feel like my stuff is shit. But
oh,
I'm going to go and kick myself in the balls now and then go to sleep.
I'm going to go cry now. Oh,
but
no.
But yeah, Reddit is one of those things that you can go down a hole and you never come back out of. Because I've found a couple of good fan theories and some of them are just like so out there and wacky to the point where like I'm not even going to worry with this.
Right.
But all in all, though, now that we stripped away the nostalgia, do you guys still feel like it's 10 out of 10? What do you guys feel?
I love it. I'm telling you, on this rewatch, I've watched it many times and we recapped it on our podcast as well. But something about this rewatch just made me appreciate, the writing, the storytelling. The performances are pretty stellar. Like Sandra Bullock as a grieving, desperate woman begging her aunts to bring her husband back from the dead. That was a pretty stunning performance. And then Nicole Kidman, first of all, being horny the whole film. Love that. But also her being possessed as well. Really great performance. And when she was in the middle of the circle and she's like writhing on the ground, it was just it's great performances. I loved it. Even the kids were really good. Sometimes kids are hit or miss. You know, we try not to judge them.
Annoying.
Right. I mean, like it's hard because they're kids, right? So sometimes there'll be a kid in a movie and they kind of, their acting is a little off. Like they're not that great, but everyone, like no one comments on it because they're a kid. But these kids were phenomenal.
Agreed.
The little girls were phenomenal. And honestly, I think that all of the actors and actresses in this movie have such great chemistry with each other. Like there wasn't a single interaction where I was like, that feels weird or that feels off. Like everything was just so seamless. The music choices, the little sound clips they have that we talked about at the beginning, they're playing in the background. They just kind of offer that vibey feel throughout the whole movie. Like again, this movie holds up for me like all the time. And like I said at the beginning, you know, we had that part where Maria jumps from the gallows and that second where she's staring at the crowd and the crowd staring at her. Like, I had realized that happened before, but I never really like took a chance to appreciate it. And I don't know. It's still a 10 for me. It's always going to be a 10 for me.
All right. I'm actually going to go higher on it. I'm going to go like a 9.8 out of 10.
All right. Yeah.
We have of how I was, but I really loved it. I really love seeing this again. And I actually had one of those moments like you did, Rose, where I actually thought it was Julia Roberts that was in this movie and not I thought it was Sandra Bullock and Julia Roberts for some reason.
Oh.
That was in this movie for some odd reason. I didn't think of it as Nicole Kidman. And I don't know what it was about that I thought that. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, so it wasn't Julia Roberts.
That's so weird. I can't, cause I feel like Sandra Bullock and Julia Roberts are kind of like the same genre of character. Like, I can't see them in the same movie, like playing opposite each other, cause they're the same genre. They're kind of the same, like, quirky, charming, stutters a little bit, a little clumsy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I couldn't have seen that, but.
But Diane West as Aunt Jet was probably my favorite character out of this. She played Aunt Edward's Hands. I just want to correct myself on who the actress was because I was drawing a blank earlier. But yeah. All in all, this was a great rewatch. I'm glad I got a chance to rewatch this with you guys. I'm glad that we reviewed this. My question for you guys is this, is what do you have coming out for your podcast? Where can people follow you and all that other good stuff? And I'll go into my tags later.
Yeah. So we are, again, Fiction Fixation Podcast, and we do movie recaps.
Oh, it's I was breathing. I wasn't trying to interrupt you. I was breathing.
No, I realized I was like, okay, that's the end of a sentence. And Courtney's like, continue your sentence. And I'm like,
Rossi does that. Like, I do that with Rossi. I'm like, and I was like, and I have, and she's like, there's a blank. I'm like, Rossi, yeah.
To be fair, I do usually talk longer when I say that, but yeah, we recap movies, and, so you can find us on wherever you listen to podcasts and then on social medias, Courtney.
Yeah. Our most recent episode was Whip It, starring Elliot Page and Drew Barrymore. And our next episode is going to be, what did we just record?
Oh, geez. What did we just record?
You sound like me right now because I'm actually looking through my stuff that I'm going to be doing soon.
We did Die Hard like right before Christmas and then we just did Whip It. We've gone to like an every other week, thing. Oh, we just did The Mummy, which was fun.
Yeah.
That movie's a fun movie to review. I did that
a couple of years back. It's so fun. I'm realizing because, you know, we did like Die Hard, The Mummy. I'm just realizing how much these like 1990s movies hold up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's amazing of how hard and the craftsmanship that everybody puts in and everything in the 90s movies and stuff compared to some of the movies that we have today.
Yeah. I mean, they're not the kind of movies that you just watch once and forget. They're the kind of movies you want to rewatch.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Because the quality's there. Something
different every single time. And sometimes it's just there, you know, you can see something in the background or something, and then you might wind up noticing something that you didn't see before or anything like that.
The Mummy is such a well-done movie. We really enjoyed it. And our next recording, and Rose is finding out here with you.
what are you doing?
Clueless.
Oh my God. I'm so excited.
I know. I'm having such nostalgia lately. You know, we did Die Hard and then Whip It, which is a newer, I guess, compared to the other ones. Yeah. Whip It is newer. And then we did The Mummy. And, Clueless has been on my to-do list forever. And I was just like, okay, no, we're going to do it.
I love it. I'm really enjoying the older movies. The nostalgia is just there. Mm-hmm. They hold up. Yeah.
It gives us the serotonin we need to sort of survive.
I gotcha. I'm right there with you with the nostalgia stuff because I like the 80s and 90s vibe of watching movies and stuff. And I do watch some new stuff and things like that too, even though I review a lot of TV shows lately. But I dive into a little bit of everything. But coming up on... March 2nd, I'm going to be doing the Cable Guy review with It Doesn't Hold Up podcast with Stu. I can't wait to have them back again. We did the Blank Check review not too long ago, and we had a blast with that. So, yeah, that's everything over here. And also, too, don't forget, next Wednesday, Rossi will be with me at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time. We're going to be doing our Dexter Original Sin reviews. And, as a matter of fact, I've been doing that every single time whenever I'm watching the Original Sin episodes. So, yeah, go on ahead, check that out. Thank you, Rose. Thank you, Courtney, so much for joining me for Practical Magic. I'm glad that you guys enjoyed this just as much as I did. And I'm hoping to have you guys back on again. I love having you guys on here. And, guys, go on ahead and follow them. They have a fantastic podcast. I really enjoyed listening to their stuff. I've actually just started listening to the Die Hard one. So I can't wait to hear your thoughts on that. So... yeah, guys. So always until next time, guys. Have a great and safe day, and we'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye-bye.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.